RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Gigi Foster is a professor with the School of Economics at the University of New South Wales, having joined UNSW in 2009 after 6 years at the University of South Australia. Formerly educated at Yale University, BA in Ethics, Politics and Economics, and the University of Maryland, PhD in Economics, she works in diverse fields including education, social influence, corruption, lab experiments, time use, behavioral economics, and Australian policy. I think Tim Wilms reported in his Aussie report, Wilms report on Tuesday on the Channel 7 Spotlight panel show on COVID. Gigi Foster was a member of that panel, and there are clips going around now of her commenting on the experience, what was in and what was cut from the show. Certainly some moments from the studio audience were cut. Anyway, we thought we'd ask Professor Foster back on RCR. She's joined us a few times already to give us a first hand on what happened there in that Channel 7 Spotlight panel show. I think it was last weekend. What was the effect? What was the experience like? Let's find out. So Gigi Foster is back on RCR. Gigi, good to have you back. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Paul. I'm very busy. I've been very busy since the Spotlight program aired on Sunday, basically responding to correspondence that people have been flooding me with since then.
Okay, like incoming. Big
time. Yes, incoming correspondence, emails mostly, texts, messages, all sorts of. Some people have stopped me in the street, but not that many, mainly because I haven't been on the street much because I've been tied to my computer answering emails.
Now you know how rock stars feel. So I want to go through that experience. And it was really fascinating to see some clips and to even know that it happened, actually. But in terms of all these incomings, what are folks saying? Exactly.
Well, I would say probably 90 to 95% of the messages I'm receiving are incredibly supportive, saying things like, thank you for representing the voice of the people. Thank you for being the only sane panelist. Thank you for nodding, you know, shaking your head to all the nonsense. I'd had a lot of body language in there, even though I didn't have as much verbal contribution. I had a lot of nonverbals that were captured and then played while other people were speaking, unbeknownst to me. I didn't know they were going to do that. And of course, I was expecting to have a lot of my contributions cut, but the audience was also, of course, cut quite a lot. So people generally have been supportive. Some people have been saying, oh, you should have said so much more, and here's all the information that you need. And of course, these are people who probably haven't been following my work for the last 4 years. So I always respond to all of the comments that I get, and particularly the negative ones, with a list of links and, you know, a supportive sort of thank you for messaging me and thank you for taking the time. I would say there's, as I say, maybe 5 to 10% that are negative. And those, I mean, a lot of what they say, I can't repeat in polite company. But some are just genuinely still completely brainwashed, like really do not understand the role of power in how things have played out in the last few years. And that seems to me to be the biggest blind spot that people who are still attached to the mainstream narratives have. They really do not understand power.
Mm, wow. Hey.
Yep. I know. I mean, like you forget history, right? I mean, you know, all you need to do is look over across history, across culture. One of the biggest constants of the human condition is if you give a person too much power, they are corrupted. It's just so clear. And of course, now we have people in power who are networked very well with each other. And so, of course, they're going to try to work together to retain that power. And it's just not to see that is almost, I mean, it's puerile, right? And it makes me kind of a despair at the quality of the education system we have here in Australia.
So tell me how you became involved in this TV show.
I was just contacted by the producer. In fact, actually, Paul, there was a Spotlight program many, I think probably 3 years ago now, early in the COVID crisis, on which I appeared. And we were, I don't remember even who was on it with me, but we were talking about the response. And of course, I was saying that the lockdowns were nonsensical and, you know, the same stuff I've been saying for 4 years, basically. And so they already knew me. ABC, of course, knows me anyway, because I've been on the ABC Q&A program 4 or 5 times. I used to have a talk radio show on ABC Radio National. I do a lot of radio spots for ABC Melbourne and Coffs Harbour and Darwin and lots of places. So I'm kind of on the list of people who, you know, they could tap. And certainly certainly in relation to COVID policy. So the producer and I had a conversation when she called me for, 45 minutes or so, just about all the different angles of the problem. And of course, I was skeptical, and I think that skepticism has been confirmed, that everything that we need to talk about could possibly be even mentioned in the course of a 45-minute prime time show with four panelists and a moderator. I mean, you just can't do it, right? I mean, we need a year at least to get through all of the angles and the perspectives and the dimensions of what went wrong and have apologies and pain on the table and a way forward. I mean, it's just a humongous social project that we've set ourselves up to have to do if we want to heal. And so this notion that you could get through it all in 1 hour, with commercial breaks, it's just nuts, right? But anyway, we talked about that. And she said, look, we're going to try to get Anastasia Palaszczuk. And I didn't know who else was going to be on the panel. I did presume it would be some establishment doctors. And of course, that's sort of what we got. And then I didn't really know anything about Michael Usher, who was the moderator, before I sat on the panel. And I'm glad that I didn't, because it seems he had a particular quite strong bias against anyone who would question the sort of the vaccine hero story and whatnot, based on what I've read of what he has written after being on the panel. One thing I really didn't know is that the audience was going to be so sane and so much on my side. I know that was a product of the grassroots movement in Australia, and particularly in Sydney. So I was very proud to see that, very relieved and delighted to see so many people who were heckling and challenging the other panelists.
So the moderator could just, so I get it, he was biased which way?
Well, he was very, in the op-ed of his that I read after the show, he seemed to be dismissing the people he called anti-vaxxers. And I really don't know what that term means, but in his own mind, I guess it must be clear. So he was extremely anti-vax. And so I think he was basically not prepared to question sort of the safe and effective narrative. I think that's the main thing.
But there would have to be a collusion between producers and the whole team. It's not just the one guy, surely.
Yeah, no, I mean, of course, that's true that they would all be working together. But whether or not somebody would tell him this is the position you have to hold, probably not. I think it's more selection into the role, right?
If my producer held that back, I wouldn't like it.
Exactly, right? But then again, you're on, probably the freest radio station in the Antipodes. So, you're a bit of kind of an exception. I will say he seemed to be alert to the fact that a lot of human rights were trampled during the COVID period, because he did mention that a couple times. So I'm not sure he would necessarily take a position in favor of vaccine mandates. But I think in terms of questioning whether the vaccines were a good idea at all from a social perspective, a health perspective, I think that's more the sort of line of argument that he would probably have rejected. Of course, I was never asked about the vaccines. I'm not a health expert. I guess I don't have a right to have an opinion or whatever. But anyway, I didn't talk about the vaccines very much at all.
Yeah. So I guess I'm wondering why they would even have this presentation, because where were they trying to go? Were they trying to push back against, because I guess everybody, vaxxed or unvaxxed, got done to by, freedoms being edited out, let's say. And they're probably not too happy about that. But do you think there was an honest attempt to sort of shine a bit of light through the crack somewhere, or was it just kind of, just something to do? I'm just wondering what the motive.
One bit of context, I don't know if you guys know about this over there in New Zealand, but Channel 7 has been quite under the pump recently. So they had a big scandal with this guy, Bruce Lerman, who was accused of raping this woman, Brittany Higgins, in the Parliament House. And I mean, whatever you think of Bruce Lerman, he was tried and convicted before he even got a trial. But Channel 7 was kind of trying to, they were involved in getting his story out and whatnot. And so, but then it all kind of fell apart when Lerman was convicted in a civil court. And anyway, so then there were some firings, and there's been a lot of movement at the top in Channel 7, and I think they're looking for ratings. And so probably somebody said, hey, let's do a COVID policy retrospective and we'll get some eyeballs.
Do we know the ratings? I know we're going to get to what it was like being in there in just a moment, but do we know how it rated? Because if it rated well,
I don't know, but I can only gauge that based on how much response I've gotten through the various, messaging channels. And I can say that it's as much as I've ever gotten from any appearance I've ever done. Okay. So I think it was quite widely watched.
Okay, so you're in there with those panelists.
Yeah.
You must be feeling out or observing them and feeling out the energy. What was it like?
A little bit. I mean, I brought a copy of my book, The Great COVID Panic, and endorsed it and gave it to Anastasia Palaszczuk. And the endorsement read, Dear Anastasia, I hope you read this. Gigi Foster. I don't know if she will. But I'm, of course, I knew what she would be saying. And I didn't really know what the other two guys would be saying. But one of them, the Robert Boy, in advance, when we were in the green room having our chicken parma or whatever it was they fed us for the evening, because we recorded on a Saturday night and we were there for 4 hours in the green room, kind of, you know, waiting around and then doing the recording and then and the makeup and everything. He was talking about some study that had been done, and I was questioning, well, who did that? Who underwrote it? And he was like, oh, the Immunization Council or such and such. And I said, we obviously know then that that's a biased source. You know, there's a conflict of interest there. And he looked right at me and he said something like, there isn't an unbiased source, or the conflicts are everywhere. There's no independent analyst, right? I mean, he's just really, really just pushing this line that, you know, vaccines are the only way to go and everybody knows it. And anybody who doesn't know it is kind of almost just doesn't deserve to have an opinion, doesn't deserve to have to say what they think. So I was kind of a bit taken aback by that. And when he looked me up online, he looked up seemingly only was my ARC grants. I've had 3 grants from the Australian Research Council in the past, actually about 10 years ago was my last one. And so he looked that up as if that was the thing that defines me as a researcher, you know, what grants I've gotten from the government. It's totally nuts. Like that, for me, that's just not, you know, it's like not the first piece of information I'd look at, you know, just Google my name. You can see what I stand for. So that was a little bit odd, but I did have that sense then going in that he was probably going to be barracking for Big Pharma. And afterwards, of course, all this information has come out, documenting the various payments he's received from big pharmaceutical companies. So he's basically a paid shill, right? That's basically
it.
The other guy, the Dr. Sanjeev S. something, he brought his daughter along. They were together in the green room and she was lovely. And it was a bit sad because afterwards, you know, we came back there and she was saying how she was getting angry because people were attacking her dad. And I said, yeah, I get that. You know,
happens, right?
But yeah, it's hard. Hopefully she's learning something. I mean, it's very, very difficult though for a child like that. She would have been maybe, I don't know, 20, to imagine what she's going through right now. She has seen her father, you know, on a show defending a position that an entire audience was heckling him about. I wonder if she's asking questions herself. I mean, that's the sort of person I really think we need to reach out to and be compassionate towards and try to help in terms of, you know, broadening her perspective. And it's going to be very challenging because she loves her dad.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, so there you are. And did you get fair time?
Look, I mean, I don't know if it was fair or not. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have a watch, but I did feel that I wasn't really getting as much time as the other panelists, but maybe not, you know, not by a huge amount. You can't really, you know, you can't do it too obviously, you know. And then, of course, in the cut, I think I definitely had more of what I said cut than what other people said that was cut. But I was expecting that. So I just tried to make every comment count and tried to say sound bites that they could use. And in fact, they did use one of the sound bites, which was an answer that I gave to the first question Michael Usher asked, something like, what did we get right? Or, you know, do you think we got anything right or something? And I said, I would struggle to find anything that people in authority got right.
Yeah, I've seen you saying that.
But that was in the promo that they used, but they didn't actually play that section in the final cut version that went to air.
Okay, interesting.
So, you know, there you go. That's
clicks,
one.
Example. Clicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Clicks.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some of the two men you described, not the doctor, but the other guy, he was very strident. You know, everything was so strident, the way it was presented, you know, with high drama is what came across to me.
Oh, because of course, you know, that's the way that I suppose they have decided, or he has decided, is the most convincing. The notion of here is the expert, and the expert is now telling you what is the truth in the face of all of these lies. I mean, that's probably what they're going for. And the irony of everything, of course, is that it's the exact opposite. It's like, you know, the purveyors of the misinformation are the people who are now continuing to spruik the mainstream narrative, which has been disproven by real research, by real science and real investigation by independent people. And again, that's a point that I tried to make there. But yes, he wasn't even referring to, he was just making claims, just making assertions. You know,
More people could have died.
Exactly. Based on what? You know, whose model are you talking? And if it is a model, simulated model, that's not data. That's just somebody's idea of something I want to write down that represents the analysis of, you know, what they want to look at. This confusion of modeling and simulation for real scientific analysis is a plague of modern science. It's so bad. That is not science. You know, it's running a model, and you can feed into a model anything you want to have it spit out, and it will. So, you know, just making these assertions, or like the TGA does follow up on all vax injuries, based on what information? How can you say that? You know, there's no way he could possibly know that that's true or false. He's just saying it because it's a talking point, and he truly believes it. I really think he does.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question to you. I mean, you'd believe a lot, or look like you are if you're Ching Ching, but, you know, you can also be kind of brainwashed into something, even if you're smart.
That's the thing. And I think sometimes it's actually easier to be brainwashed when you're smart, because your smartness means, and particularly when you're educated, you know, with all sorts of fancy tools of the trade, techniques and mathematical modeling, you know, analysis methods and things, you can make up reasons why whatever thing you're being told by the peer-reviewed mainstream journals, it, you know, is true, really is true. You can rationalize and justify almost anything. The smarter you are, in a sense, or the more educated you are, the more tools you've been given to be able to craft a justification, a nice little nest in which to place a lie. And unfortunately, I think that's what happens with these people. And I really don't truly believe, and the only reason I say this, I don't know how he could live with himself otherwise, if he's just literally lying through his teeth. I think he truly does believe the things he's saying. He feels himself to be a force for good. He feels himself to be a sort of valiant, you know, defender of the truth sort of thing. And that's feeding his ego. And so to really face consciously that he is actually the information, you know, disinformation purveyor, I think that would destroy him psychologically. So he can't.
Right? Interesting. He looked at your grants.
I know, right? Because again, something in him knows that, well, there's money, you know, money trails around the place or whatever. So, but also you could claim it's not just that he thinks people are defined by the money they get, but rather that they're going to necessarily be doing research that's related to the themes of their grants, because that is true in science. That's what happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm agnostic about it. I don't really know, but yeah, I like to believe that people think of themselves as good people, and that they must have a self-image in the mind that is sustained somehow. And so I don't see how he could do that if he really believed that he was lying.
And then there were the reactions from some of the audience members that I don't think you couldn't have broadcast them, actually, to some of what he said.
Yes.
So he's seeing that in the face in a TV studio, and it's not pretty, actually. Oh. It's not pretty at all. So what were those moments like?
It was pretty tense, right? I mean, I definitely sensed there was a particular moment when the mood changed, because when we first walked on and took our seats, Michael Usher, you know, made eye contact with everybody but me, actually, on the panel before we started the program, the recording. And everybody seemed pretty relaxed and comfortable. They were smiling, you know, ready to go, no problem. And the audience had not shown its hand. We did not know that the audience was mainly made up, or at least in large part made up, by these people who are prepared to speak out against the mandates, the, you know, talk about the dangers of the vaccines, et cetera, the lockdowns. So I don't think they saw it coming. And then sometime, I don't remember exactly how far in, but sometime in the middle of the recording, we started somebody clapped. I think it was applause response from the audience to something that I said. And that made the panelists' head turn, right? That was like, oh, wait, know, are we dealing with a hostile audience here? You know, you could tell that that's what they were starting to ask. And from that point on, they were squirming, definitely. They were squirming a bit more on the panel. And at one point, it got quite heated. And you may have seen in the feeds of the uncut version, right, on Twitter. Somebody recorded it in their pocket, I guess. And so it was kind of drip feeding out. Maybe there's more to come. I don't know. There certainly was a lot more than what's already been fed out that got cut. But at some point in there, it got really, really tense. And I felt that I could perhaps try to defuse the situation. I hadn't been called on for a while. And so I thought I probably had the capital to be able to ask Michael Usher if I could say something. So I did. And then I tried to articulate this problem that we have between this bubble of misinformation that the elites and people in authority are often dealing with and the people on the street and their information sources, which often are completely different. And so I tried to make that point. And of course, then Sanjeev, the younger doctor on my left, you know, followed that by saying, oh, yes. And, you know, the WHO, it does know that it needs to take misinformation seriously, right? So, you know, and of course, I wasn't able to respond to that. We went right on to the next point. But again, I think people who are thinking saw everything that was going on there. And they saw the nonsense being spouted, just increasingly being, you know, without any real scientific defense, just being asserted on the program. And people have really had enough. And they saw that in the audience response, even the audience responses that were captured. And there were probably about two or three more times that I said something and the audience clapped for it, they got cut. So we may perhaps see those bits, you know, filter through on Twitter over the next few days.
Probably get more views than the actual program itself.
Maybe.
Okay, so we've had a recent occurrence here in the media where one of our people, let's say, managed to get onto a mainstream talkback radio show.
Yep.
And got 4.5 minutes of information out.
Wow.
Which is a first. Okay. And yeah, there was obviously a willingness, I've spoken to that person personally about it, to let her on.
Yeah.
Because I've done talkback radio, you've got a gate guard, and some people will never get through.
Yep.
The way it is. But she got through 4.5 minutes. The website exploded, 1,000% traffic in the time after that.
Yep.
And it was, if you were waking up to this now, it was kind of like a sledgehammer coming down, but yeah, in a nice way. We are starting to think that maybe that's a sign, and we're not on our knees, you know, for mainstream media. Bugger yep. them, I say.
Yeah, totally.
But you see that bump in the web traffic. The interest is there. You're talking about the audience there and this program even being on. I'm wondering what your view is of this information now getting out and sort of like hitting the target, you know? Yeah. Do you think that's yeah. starting to happen now?
I definitely think, I mean, we have experienced a boost in the last few days. The whole community, everybody, you know, people, some of them been writing to me. We've seen various articles being published about this whole thing. We're starting to see people make fun of, you know, the mainstream. I've got a book here that's it's a parody book. It's called Busting Anti-Vax Myths, Seriously Expert Arguments for the COVID Deniers in Your Life, right? And it's a total parody of this, of basically the positions that were being taken on that program by the other panelists. So what I'm hoping to do is to find time somehow to write like an op-ed that I submit to one of the mainstream papers here in Australia that talks about that book and talks about the need to start making fun of this stupidity that we've been fed, like we're imbeciles for the last few years. And I think that the appetite is possibly there now for that sort of thing. That's why I've had this book, the author of it sent it to me, you know, probably a year ago, and I've had it sitting around and I've just been, you know, I can't really do anything with it, that the time isn't right to try to push this in the mainstream, but I'm now feeling maybe I might be able to get an editor to say yes. I do think it's a baby step in the right direction. But of course, you know, Paul, I mean, the power structures are still in place, right? So we have a huge marathon endeavor still.
It's not in their interest, is it?
Absolutely not. And they know that. And so this, you know, they were trying to throw us a bone and, you know, we've driven a truck through the tiny sliver of light that they offered us, right? And so now they're thinking, oh, geez, how can we, you know, do damage control here? But it is the grassroots that will ultimately be the source of energy to improve the country. And that's also the case in New Zealand. And so, yeah, the more that the grassroots people actually start to see themselves, see a community that they can belong to, right, in the resistance and restoration community, in Team Sanity, you know, these are the things I call sort of our side, then I think the more willing they're going to be to jump ship. Because one of the reasons why people went along with all the madness is they thought that's where community lived. They thought that's where they got security and a sense of belonging and purpose. No, you can get that with us, right? And so if we can show that we are, you know, not just a great community, we're fun, we've got plans, and we want to restore the strength of our countries. We want to, you know, promote people loving each other and working
together. Yeah, we love each other.
right? I mean, that's all we want. And so just the more we promote that, the more I think we can tempt people to actually start their little journey, you know, the small baby steps towards the journey of discovery about what's really happened here. And they will recognize some of themselves in us when these programs air, because a lot of people, of course, have had negative effects from the vaccines, or they know people who have, and they will have questions in their minds. I think the vaccines are one of the biggest tickets that will help us to recruit people, because that product is still in people's bodies. You can't get it out. And every time somebody coughs or sneezes or gets cancer or something, they're going to still be wondering, geez, could this have been the vaccines, right? So that's a longstanding hurt that doesn't go away, unlike the lockdowns. People can try to memory hole that and pretend like it didn't happen because they're not locked down anymore. But with the vaccines, you know, you can recall AstraZeneca, but how can you recall it out of my body, right? There was a meme going around like that, and it's just true. So I think that was a crucial strategic mistake by, you know, the power hierarchy. I think they were just too arrogant, believing that they could inject, you know, force injection these people all over the world, all over the West, and somehow get away with that. Maybe they didn't know how bad the side effects would be, but I think they underestimated the willingness of people to fight back after the tragedy that's been rolled out. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see whether we get more progress here, but certainly for the next, you know, week or so, I'm hopeful that we'll get an increase in the number of people listening to some of the messages of Team Sanity.
Yeah, it's interesting here. We have a second phase of the original Royal Inquiry, Commission of Inquiry into the vaccine response, let's say. We have a phase two now, and those terms of reference have been way broadened. We still have to be nailed down, but they encompass efficacy, safety, harm, things like that. And that's a big story. But this is, again, what we're up against. There is no reporting of it.
I reported it, Paul. So, I mean, to the extent that we can. So I have a think tank that I co-founded last year with some like-minded people, Australians for Science and Freedom, and we send out monthly updates about community news. And that was a big story. That was in my first paragraph, I think, that I wrote in the little summary of what was happening, was that the Tony Blakely-led, previously very defanged inquiry was being expanded, possibly somewhat overwritten by a new one. And so I think that's a great product of your coalition government over there, even though it didn't pass, you know, with unanimity, as I understand it. There was some disagreement in the coalition about whether they would say yes, but they did. So yeah, it's a very important piece of information that has, you know, that's happened. But yeah, we don't have the coverage of that here in Australia on the mainstream at all. And, you know, similarly with big research papers that are coming out that are really important. We did get coverage in news.com, which is a pretty mainstream source here, of the paper by Saskia and colleagues that looked at the connection between the vaccine rollouts and excess deaths. Mm-hmm. So that was useful. But there's still, 95% of what gets produced that I would actually call science in this area does not get covered in mainstream press outlets here. I'm sure that's still true in New Zealand. So that means that we need to keep growing and supporting our independent media and hope that they continue to reach more people and grab market share from the moribund, mainstream that's basically just a propaganda outlet now.
Yeah. Is there anything like I just described happening in Australia at the moment?
Well, I think we were already on the track to having a Royal Commission before the Spotlight program. And certainly ASF and a bunch of other organizations, like-minded organizations, have put in submissions outlining the terms of reference that we think that inquiry should have, that Royal Commission should have. Julian Gillespie spearheaded the effort, which was across multiple organizations. We've got, 750-page document. ASF is hoping to organize our own Australian COVID inquiry, so sort of like the Canadian Citizens Inquiry. That would be great, but it's a huge, massive undertaking, so we're kind of just scoping it now to see if we could do it. In terms of people actually at the top, who have been calling for this. We have a few senators who think that we need independent analysis, but, you know, I mean, even a royal commission is generally speaking not something I would expect to uncover truth, because royal commissions here generally don't, and they don't produce change generally. But I think it's probably a process we must go through before we get to the real inquiry by really independent people that actually goes deep into communities and tries to provide healing, because that's kind of something we've never had to do in the past, but we really need to do that this time. I don't see the sort of silver bullet in the Royal Commission that some people do. And I think it's going to be a multi-year process before we get any kind of serious reckoning.
Yeah. We're at a crossroads, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, we've been at a crossroads for quite a while. I think that there's problems in the West that extend much more broadly than just the COVID response. The COVID response reflected a lot of those problems. And I've been thinking about them with my colleagues, my co-authors. So, if people are interested in thinking about how to rebuild, because I think that's the biggest question, you know, what kind of...
That's the fork in the road. Yeah,
that's the fork. You know, how are we going to actually choose to construct our society moving forward? If we're going to reject what's in place, what's the new stuff going to look like? So that's what ASF is for. So scienceandfreedom.org. Some of the new initiatives include a new educational initiative in Belgium. I'm about to go on a plane and help out with that. It's called Nova Academia, novacad.org. And also a new health system that I'm speaking about with many people in Australia that would be using international waters boats to help people to get the procedures and the prescriptions that they want that are, you know, to escape OPRA, essentially, which is our health regulating, registration body. So new systems, truly new systems that think creatively out of the box. How can we get out from under the tyranny of bureaucracy? And I'm very excited. It's an amazing time to be alive.
Great to hear from you, Gigi. Really appreciate you taking us into the studio with you like that. And that'll go down, won't it? And those clips will live forever. Oh, they did use quite a bit of your body language. They did, looks and eye sort of rolls and things like that.
They did. And I was happy with that. I mean, maybe that was an attempt to try to depict me as some kind of fringe nutcase, but I have to say.
They do that in reality shows, you know, when someone says something and it cuts and the person's like looking the other way, rolling. You see what they're trying to do here? It's just an entertainment product for them.
Oh, it is. Of course it is. That's right. But hopefully some truth gets piggybacking along with that entertainment.
Anyway, thanks for coming back on RCR and telling us about that. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Paul, and keep up the great work.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.